Hey, everybody. That is Gary Smith.
Hello.
That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
And I am Eddie Bramble, and this is episode 52 of the Blackwater's Edge podcast.
52. Man, dude, this is like going to be one of the best podcasts, I think, tonight ever, man. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just feel like, man, we're doing something.
I think you say that every time, but you're never wrong. That's just my opinion.
I don't know about you, but we're going to talk a little bit about this at some point in the podcast.
Absolutely.
And,
Let's give something away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want to give something away right now right off the bat?
Let's start it off that way.
Okay. All right. So, hey, folks, look, we're glad you're here this week. Got a lot of good stuff going on. We've had some great visitors here today, on the Eastern Shore. We're going to give away a prize. And look, later in the podcast, we're going to give away one of the best.
Don't tell.
Relax.
All right. I'm just excited. I didn't even really sleep last night. I'm so excited. You know how excited I am. All right. Here we go. Gary, let's give him something. Just grab something. We'll give him something. Then I'll tell him about
Ooh.
That.
Ooh,
what is that?
Hyperelastics.
Ooh.
That's my favorite color, too. That fire tiger. That is hot.
So, Eddie, what do you want to say? I know we had yesterday. I had something to do with cheesesteaks, but let's get something.
Isn't that what you call your personal best?
That is what I caught my PB on. Absolutely. So I know yesterday was National Cheesesteak Day, and that put a hurting on us.
You did pretty good. I mean,
they put a hurting on us. But let's go with I love Hyperelastics. That's the first giveaway.
Pretty simple. So that's the first giveaway. I love Hyperelastics. Let's talk fishing, folks. So a lot of you guys out there, you're fishing. I've been talking to you this week. Hey, man, isn't it nice now that we're through all the BS? We can get out the house. We can hang out with our friends. We can do some cool stuff. I mean, man, I don't know about you, but I'm just excited to see some of the normalcy coming back around. You know what I mean? It's good to see people out on the banks fishing this year. You know, last year we couldn't do all this as much as we're doing. So, you know, it's just good to see everybody coming together and things are shaping up a little better this year than we had last year. And for that, I'm grateful. I know that.
Absolutely.
I don't know about you guys. So, fishing-wise, let's talk about what's going on here in Dorchester County. So, on the snakehead grounds, you can look at the pages and simply see what's up. We're catching lots of snakeheads. So, I know some of my friends that aren't here on the Eastern Shore that are in our other areas that have, you know, kind of learned the tactics that I use here to catch them early on. They put them to work in other areas of the state.
Wait. What do you mean learned? You mean the secrets you gave away?
Well, whatever. When you hear my name, just smile, baby. You know? So, I mean, here's the thing, really, you know, I know some good friends that put some of these tactics to work in other areas, and man, the big fish that they caught is unbelievable. And I've got some of that coming. You know, I shared that picture the other day of that giant snakehead that had that 13-inch yellow perch in its belly. You know what I mean?
And then the one we saw today.
Oh, I forgot all about that. I thought you were talking about something else.
No.
Okay, so, yeah, today, for those that did watch, you know, we went live. So, you know, we had a few fish that we brought in this morning, and one of them particularly, you know, I was handing off to Eddie to look at, and we were going to weigh, and as I looked, I saw a little bit of tail hanging out the bottom of the throat, and I says, dang, man, this one's got something in it, man. What do you think? And Eddie said, hey, let's show him what's in it, man. So that was a pretty good idea, you know, to be able to show people, you know, right there up front, you know, what they're eating and how big of a piece of prey, you know, these fish can really eat. You know, when the guy's calling me and he's asking me, man, come on, dude, you mean to tell me that fish can eat a 12-inch bass with no problem? Look.
They can eat half their body length.
Exactly. Right,
that's what I wanted to
say.
So we measured
actually
that fish.
A little more than that.
You know, and here's the thing. Like, we went live with that, and I was just telling Eddie, I still haven't had a chance to even look at the video because we've been so busy
We got to give away a prize for that, too. Remember whoever guessed the right length of the fish?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
That's right. We haven't even read the comments yet.
We haven't done that yet, so yeah, I forgot to do that, too. We had some special visitors here. There's so much to talk about. So, fishing-wise, let's talk about fishing. So, Dorchester County, snakehead, few big bass, couple white perch. Didn't see much in the way of yellow perch. Know of one, maybe two people that say they had good yellow perch here. I've talked to some people in other areas, and that's why I made the post I made the other day about the perch, you know. I mean, look, you got to just look at it like this, man. We've got a 10- to 15-pound predator now here that's living year-round. It's not just coming here to visit and then going up to New Jersey or anything like that, you know. The places that snakeheads really prefer, if you look at what Jim Thompson was talking about in his comments, you know, it's a total diverse habitat as compared to the blue cat. So, you know, there's a valuable argument about blue cats. There's a valuable argument about snakeheads. Today, not to tease into everything, we're going to talk about Conowingo Dam and what's going on up there. So make sure you hang in here at the end of the show. I'm going to have Rob Ballantyne on here talking about the shad operation and what we're going to do to try to help these shad out this year, as opposed to just shutting a shad lift down and not doing a damn thing.
I don't think that qualifies as helping at all.
Well, yeah, I think we're going to do really good with him explaining everything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I mean, that's the thing, dude. I mean, it can't hurt, you know? Right. So Rob, hats off to you for everything you guys have done. I've known about this for a while. I just haven't been able to say anything. You guys have known about it. We've all had a piece of action, you know, with it. So, fishing report-wise, snakeheads, crappie, a few crappie here and there. Down Mardello, you know, they're catching a lot of snakeheads down there. The people I'm talking to down around that area. I'm talking to some people over in the Quantico area that are saying they're seeing mass amounts of snakeheads in areas they didn't see before. We have found some places here locally that we really haven't looked at before, and they're absolutely infested. You know, if you've seen Cornflower with his 100 and 150 fish, you know, plus
places we thought were too salty.
Yeah, places that we thought were too salty that they wouldn't be able to be at, we're finding them and we're finding mass numbers. Yeah, so
big numbers.
Now what we're looking back at is the whole adaptation factor that we talked about 5 years ago when people were saying that they hibernated and they didn't come out of the mud and you couldn't catch them in 30-degree water. You know, there's a lot of things we're looking at here, and it's all change, you know? It's all change. So we're going to have to adapt to change. You know, that's right. All. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to handle things like that. But fishing's been great on the warm days. You know, what people don't seem to understand, you know, if we get 2 warm days here, here we go again. Boom, we got a feeding frenzy going on. You know, then we get rain. It shuts down for 24 hours. I guess them suckers get starving to death. As soon as we get 2 more warm days, bam, we're back at action feeding again. Over Key Wireless today, I know they smoked some fish over there. I know of 4 or 5 other places today they smoked some fish at today. And I told those people, one guy just called me a little bit ago. He says, man, I'm getting ready to pack up and leave. I said, hold on a minute. How many fish do you catch? He said, I got 10. I said, so you've caught 10 snakeheads there and you're packing up and you're going home. Well, I haven't had a bite in an hour. What's the tide doing? Not much anything. That's why I'm leaving. Let me ask you a question. What do you think is going to happen when the tide turns, comes back in, and all this colder water that's coming in gets pushed back by this warmer water that's out in front this afternoon with the sun coming out? I didn't think about it like that. Are you saying I should stay? I don't know how else to say it to you. I mean, it's like yesterday, the guys called me, hey, I heard the road's flooding. Should I come down? Look, folks, you don't know if you don't go. I'm going to have that shirt here real soon. You know, you'd be wearing that sucker. You don't know if you don't go. You know, that's just the bottom line with every kind of fishing, not just snakehead fishing. You know what I'm saying? What, Eddie? What now, man?
Should I stay or should I go?
I don't know. That would be a good one, too. Hey, we could have a snakehead with a briefcase either going into the restaurant or leaving the restaurant, right? How's that? So, no, I mean, we're having fun. This is good. Fishing-wise, the perch runs are still somewhat underway. You're not going to have much more of that here on the Eastern Shore. It's shaping up to the north in the Upper Bay. You know, you're seeing some perch in places like that. White perch now showing up. Yellow perch are pretty much done everywhere, you know? So let's see how many white perch we see in some of these places now. Pay attention to that, what you saw last year and what you see this year and what you saw 2 years ago. Just keep doing the math, man. You know what I mean? The numbers don't lie. So that's where I am, and I know, let's get right into this thing because we've got one of the most magnificent guests. Not all of our guests are magnificent, but look, Happy Pat, you know, kind of turned me on to this guy here. He left a comment, said, you should be on the Blackwater's Edge podcast. And, you know, I said, bring him on. Next thing you know, here we are. So,
here we are.
Yeah, man, introduce the fellow. Let's get him some love.
That's right. So this week we have, let me make sure I say this right, Andy Augenbaugh. Is that right?
That's it. You got it right.
Good deal. Andy, so for those who don't know about you, why don't you just give a quick overview of who you are and what you do.
I was going to post a biography before he starts, but I got to thinking about it. I wasn't going to do that. I don't want to post a lot of pictures up there of good stuff, so people were just like, I got to watch and see who this dude is. So that's why I didn't post the biography. That's all, Andy.
That's cool. So basically, I'm originally from Maryland, grew up in Anne Arundel County, live in Carroll County now when I'm home. But currently I travel full-time on the road. I take a travel trailer and a Toyota pickup, hunting and fishing all over the country. That's kind of what I do today. I've been writing for magazines since about 97. I started locally. I wrote for the Fishing Hunting Journal for a really long time. National magazines, both hunting, fishing, and off-roading. I had a Sunday outdoors column in the Carroll County Times for about 10 years. that's kind of me in a nutshell. I know we had talked earlier about, you know, what kind of hunting and fishing I do, and pretty much it's what's in season and kind of where I want to go and what I want to do. I'm not an expert in any of it.
Are you sure?
I'm an expert at making it fun. Put it that way.
That's all that matters, right there.
That's right.
And if I can add a kayak to whatever I'm doing, I'll do it. I just got back from South Carolina. I was down there for a week hog hunting, and pretty much hog hunt all week out of a kayak. So.
Oh wow, that's different. That's something Gary. I know Gary would probably with a bow or a gun.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's quite interesting to shoot out a kayak with a 270 at a hog.
That's what I was wondering. Was bow or I can't imagine someone trying a crossbow, maybe, but it'd be hard to pull a bow in a
That'd be
kayak.
Tough.
I haven't tried that. That's a good idea.
So. You know, Andy, before you get too far, you know, because I'm just curious, I'm sure a lot of people out there are thinking the same thing. You said I've written for a lot of magazines, hunting this and that, you know, and that was the cool thing when I started looking at all the stuff after Patrick had made the introduction was the diversity that you had at your fingertips and the things that you were in, you know, and that was just really neat to see. It's like every corner's covered out there in the outdoors kind of thing when I looked at you, you know? So just to give the people an overview, what are some of the magazines that you've written for, you know what I mean? Talk to us.
Yeah, no, the local ones, the Fishing Hunting Journal, and then the Maryland Hunting Quarterly. I was the archery expert on that when it first came out.
These are your credentials, you know. I want these people to know, what your impact has been, because you're a pretty impactful guy out here to a lot of people.
Well, the magazine world doesn't exist like it used
right.
to. You know, the internet kind of did that. So I ran a blog for a while. Today, currently, I'm writing books. I've got two books out there now.
I want to talk about your books. Yep.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah, most definitely. So. And I got a couple more books in the works that I'm working on now currently. And that's kind of the push. But as far as what magazines, North American Whitetail, Waterfowl. I really got into waterfowling as an adult. I mean, I grew up as a deer hunter, kind of got tired of sitting in tree stands. So I started waterfowl hunting. And I mean, I love waterfowl hunting. I really do. I think if I had to pick, that would be the one. I did a lot of stuff for wildfowl. Then I did some off-road magazines, low range magazine, JP magazine, Peterson's four wheel and off-road, different things like that. Sportsman's Channel magazine. I did a couple things for them as well. So just as a freelancer, you get what you can, you know, do. So, but it's been a few years since I've done the magazine work. Like I said, I've kind of transitioned into putting my writing efforts into books. So, and the one that Patrick was all excited was the 2 months in a tent. That's my latest book. So 2018, I took the summer, and the book's called 2 months in a tent, but I was actually on the road for closer to three. It just title rang better. And basically I took, my Toyota Tacoma, threw a tent on top, kind of fixed it up a little bit, kind of like an overlanding type vehicle. And I went fishing and mountain biking and kayaking and caribou hunting in Alaska for 2 to 3 months.
Wow.
So what does Ogdenbaugh mean? I don't have any down here on shore. We just got Smith and Brown.
That's like everybody asking when you call somebody, this is Kaz. What is a Kaz? That's my name, dude, you know?
I think it's a fair question.
If it had any more letters, it'd be a four-letter word.
Oh, shit. Oh.
So actually, that is kind of interesting because Ogdenbaugh, is a German name, and it loosely translates into Eye of the Woods. And from what I understand, back in Germany, the family were the gamekeepers on the properties that the royalty owned. Europe is so different than the U.S. I mean, in Europe, the landowners own the game.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a whole different process over there and a whole different system.
Wow, so, I never knew that.
Yeah. So then you had, back in the day then, you had gamekeepers who took care of the property and chased the poachers off.
Cool.
So that's
following your heritage then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty cool story. See, I told you this was going to have a lot of good stuff in here, man. You know, there's so much things we can cover other than just snakeheads, you know what I mean, which is kind of cool. You know, we can talk about a lot of stuff. You know,
The cool thing is about snakeheads. Now, in 2013 through 17, I was living in Old Town Alexandria, and I was chasing snakeheads hard over at Mallows Bay and Mattawoman and all in that area.
You're talking about over on the Potomac side.
Yeah, on the Potomac
side. Well, you know, I mean, here's something that I've been brewing with here a little bit lately, and I don't know if anybody listened to the last podcast. I know you're getting ready to talk about the Potomac, so I just kind of want to ask you, because if you're over there and you've seen some of what's going on, you know, Rob Steiner was in here, and we were talking about the numbers and what's going on over there, you know, and here we are, you know, a couple years ago, you know, let's look at 2018, let's say 2017, everybody was saying everything was bouncing out, you know, snakeheads and bass go to the movies, they're all sharing popcorn and Twizzlers, and, you know, there's no impact. And I think that a lot of us knew that all the advertising and the bow tournaments and things like that were definitely having some kind of an impact on removing the fish out of the equation, coupled with the netters that are catfishing that got them in their nets on the perch runs and things like that. We thought we were really getting them out of there and doing something. But in the meantime, as that's going on, we're watching what's going on here unfold, and we're like, wait a minute, man, this doesn't make sense. So, you know, I've been trying to go here lately back with these local fellows in the bass tournaments and the guys that are out there guiding and doing these, you know, daily trips and stuff like that. And the feedback I've had here lately pretty much lines up with the data that we're collecting through the state and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, that the numbers were coming back up hard. I think we were at a 330% gain, yeah, or something it was
last time
they last survey in 1 year's time compared to the previous year that was surveyed in abundance, you know. So if something I'm looking at in abundance is telling me that there's a 330% increase, but I've got guys over here saying, nah, I'm not catching the fish, you know, I want to be the guy who's doing that digging to try to find out really what's going on, who's right, who's wrong. Not that there's who's right, who's wrong, but let's try to really look at the picture as a whole, break it down, and really see, are they coming back? Is what these guys are saying, you know, that the guys that are still bow shooting over there are having some of the best nights they've had ever? I mean, so if you've been down there and you know something, give us some background on the Potomac, because we don't know a lot about that. And a lot of guys are real quick to call us out and say, you know, hey, that you don't know anything about over here. Well, you're right. We don't know a lot about over there, but I know enough from the people that I've talked to that I've known for 40 years that fish that fishery, or I don't want to say 40, but 30 years anyway. I'm only 46, but I've known a lot of them guys since I was 14 years old, you know. So, yeah, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit down there.
Well, when I was down there, I pretty much was, like I said, fished some 2013 to 17. I was fishing Mattawoman, and I really love Mallows Bay. And if you know anything about Mallows Bay,
I think that was one of the places he was talking about. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a bunch of all the sunken ships, and you know, and I'm fishing. I like my kayak. I don't have to worry about gas and motors and all that. So I just, you know, I gave up my boats and just love my kayak. And I can get in there and fish, and the bass boats won't go because of the underwater structures, the metal rods and things. So I got it to myself without. And I was fishing 2 to 3 days a week. That's typical for me. And I know certain points that I'd fish down there. When I first started, it was 80, 90% snakeheads with a largemouth thrown in. Okay. The last season I fished down there in 17, I was catching more largemouth than I was snakeheads.
And that, you know, yeah, that kind of runs right in line with what we've been told too, yeah, until the last like
two years.
Yeah, 2 years, yeah. It's kind of come back snakeheads in full force. Back, yeah.
It's coming back. And I don't know what to attribute it to. I mean, I kind of like made probably the bow fishermen. I don't know if they were putting a good herd on them or the netters, like you were saying, Kaz. But I mean, in that time frame, you definitely saw. And from my perspective, like I said, I was on the water all summer, 2-3 days a week fishing. So it wasn't 3 or 4 fishing trips in the season. So you
saw more fish starting to come back.
I saw, by the last summer I fished in 17, it was noticeable. I was catching more largemouth and less snakehead. You know, I love my top water frog, or a big white ivory finesse bait and just dance that around. I mean, I'm a soft plastic guy. That's what I like.
Me too. I love plastics.
That's what I like to do.
So, I mean, and frogs are fun, and, you know, it's a great explosion, and it's a lot of fun. So, when I was down there doing that, I was primarily frog fishing and maybe, a jerk soft bait sometimes. So I definitely, now what's happened since then, I don't know. I've been in Alaska and Canada chasing brookies and smallmouth.
Man, you're all over the place, aren't you?
So I said, I'm so envious when I saw everything you did, you know?
Well, I mean, the trip in 18, the summer, that was kind of a neat deal because I had been planning on doing a long trip like that. And when I first started planning it, it was more of just kind of driving around and checking things out. And I quickly realized that's not what I wanted to do. I actually wanted to do, you know, activities and do things. So I kind of set the trip up based on activities. So when I left Maryland, I went up to upstate New York at Lake Placid, went mountain biking, downhill mountain biking on the ski slopes, left there, went up in Ontario, Canada, started fishing and heading west. So then the trip only had two hard dates. One was a canoe trip that I was doing on the Yukon River.
Were you doing portages in between, or was this like just straight on through?
Across Canada?
Yeah.
I was driving.
Okay.
Yeah, I drove it, you know, 2,000 miles across Canada, east coast to west coast. And I was fishing along the way. So that stage of the trip I was fishing. I did, you know, I was chasing, I love my smallmouth. I mean, smallmouth are fun, acrobats, strong fighters. So I kind of, and that, and I was focusing on the brook trout because they have, you know, 3 to 5 pound brookies are not uncommon.
Wow.
I mean, you're not catching 12, you know, you catch a 12 inch brookie up there, that's bait. So I was chasing them, and I was chasing smallmouth, worked my way across Canada. Then when I got over to the Yukon Territory over in Dawson City, I picked up a shuttle, and they dropped me off on the Yukon River. Then I did a 260-mile solo canoe trip down the Yukon River.
So wow. Let me ask you, on that trip, was that just straight on through, or were you portaging as you went down? Were you camping here for a night and doing that kind of thing, or were you just kind of...
I camped on the river. That was supposed to be a 7 to 8 day trip, and there's no portages. It's just straight down the Yukon River.
And you're gonna tell me you're like me, it only took 2 days for you, right?
I did it in 4 because I was scared of the grizzly bear.
Okay, that was gonna be, okay. That's why I was asking what I was asking. Okay, because my next question was gonna be, so you mean to tell me you're out there sleeping every single night with the bears out there sniffing your tent? No way,
buddy.
Well,
the very first night, I'm doing this solo, and it's remote. I mean, the reason that float is 260 miles is that's the closest put in and take out. There's no road running parallel to the river. The only choice you have is to finish the float. There's no place to go.
So my next question, after you're done and when you finish, how many people have died doing this thing? Because this sounds treacherous,
I would imagine,
man.
They're not going to know you're missing for 7 days, and by then they probably wait a couple more.
Yep. Well, that's just it. They just kind of, you know, if you don't show up in a couple of weeks, then they go looking for you.
Yeah. They encourage you to wear orange.
So the first night, there's one set of rapids that you come into. And I wanted to repack the boat and hit them fresh in the morning. So I only did about 20 miles the first afternoon. And I stopped, set up camp. Now, this is in the middle of summer. It don't get dark till midnight, right?
I mean, right.
And it's daylight at 5 a.m. So I get in the tent. It's around dusk. And I'm sitting in the tent. And all of a sudden, I hear this grunting, you know, this on the beach and knocking over rocks. And I'm like, holy smokes, there's a grizzly on the beach. So I'm sitting there in this little one-man tent, and I got my bear spray in one hand, and I got my Crown CPS in the other.
Where's the toilet paper at, man?
Well, where it needs to be. I don't know. You got this little one-man tent with a 28-inch barrel shotgun. You ain't tweaking. It just don't work. So I'm sitting there, and by myself. There's not another soul for probably 40 miles around me. And finally, I peeked out the tent after he's gone. I didn't see anything. So all night, I'm laying there just holding a shotgun, sleeping with shotguns. Just, you know, I'm an East Coast boy. You know, all of a sudden, I'm sleeping with flipping grizzly bears. And I got up in the morning, and I looked around, and it was moose tracks on the beach.
That's insane, man.
That could have been a lot worse, but it was that.
Could have been a lot worse.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, and that trip kind of changed as it went on. And that's kind of the neat things about these kind of travels is I anticipated taking, like I said, 7-8 days and just kind of exploring the trapper cabins and doing some fishing and things like that. Well, the river current is so strong, and it's hard. To the experience is hard. I mean, basically, I'm sitting there with my GPS, and without paddling, I'm doing 6 to 7 miles an hour.
Wow. That's pretty fast, dude.
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, so you don't really have rapids, but you got these big boils of water that, you know, roll up. And if you're used to kayaking or canoeing, typically like when a Potomac here or wherever, when it creeks back home, when you get into one of them pools, you just start to paddle hard to get through it. Well, on the Yukon, you do that, the river laughs at you and just pushes the boat the other way. I mean, it was nasty. So the last day, the last evening, I was camped on an island, and I realized I had 96 miles to go to finish, and this was going to be day 4 on the river. And the White River comes into the Yukon right below where I was camped and really increases the flow. So with the increased flow and the length of daylight, so you figure, like I said, it gets daylight around 5 o'clock, doesn't get dark till almost midnight. And I knew how many miles I had paddled a couple days prior. I think I can do 100 miles in one day in the daylight. So I said that became the new mission of the trip. So the next morning I was up at daylight, jumped in the kayak, loaded up the tent, took off 10:30 at night. I'm walking down Main Street in Dawson City, and I had just kayaked 96 miles in the daylight.
Man, that's rolling.
That was kind of cool. I mean, that was – now, I'll tell you, the last 2 miles across the last bend was the longest 2 miles I've ever paddled in my life.
That's it. Let me interrupt you for just a second. We got a winner on the Hyperlastics, and that is Brad Droter, I guess it is, D-R-O-T-A-R.
Brad, that's right, Brad.
Brad, you stop in the store. You can pick that bait up next time you come down here. Brad Drotar, I think it was. I can't find it now on my thing.
Drotar.
13 comments. He's all the way at the top. Anyway, real quick, while I'm thinking about it, you know, my good friend Brian Howard, he's in there in the comments saying hi to everybody, and I just want to give Brian a shout out because Brian was the guy who put me in touch with the people at Aberdeen Proving Ground. And for those of you that don't know, I have talked to some of the people over on APG, and we are entertaining the possibility of opening up some areas where some reclamation has been done, and it's safe to put some people in there to remove snakeheads.
Brad says close enough on his name.
Okay. Hey, there you go, buddy. Hey, we're learning as we go, too, bro.
You can tell us how to say it when you pick up your bag.
That's right.
Yeah, I might even sell you some more stuff while you're here.
That's all we got is Kenny's Brambles and Smith. Something else away before we start again.
Let me finish with APG real quick, because absolutely. Some people were talking about that yesterday. So, you know, we got the tournament coming up. So I don't think we're going to have that done by then. But so here's how it would work in APG if we do this. You know, we're going to have a permit. You know, you're going to have to apply for the permit because you're going to be going into a secure area to go fishing. So you're going to have a background check. You're going to have all that stuff before you're given a permit. And you're going to pay for the permit. And you're going to be logged in each day when you go to this area. That way, if there's any trash, any bullshit at the end of the day, you've been in there. It's documented. We know you were there. And guess what? You ain't coming back. You know, so
simple as that.
So we're figuring out that thing. There's a lot of areas that we're just not going to be able to get into. You know, Greg Hall was mentioning the other day about ordnance. You know, Aberdeen Proving Ground was used back in the World War to develop chemical warfare, but it was also used as a place to test munitions and things like that.
It's called proving.
So, you know, so that's the issue that we have with all these off-limit waters. I'm so pissed off, this is off-limit. Well, I'm glad it's off limit and you're still here to talk to me today, you know? So, you know, that's kind of how I feel about it. But just know that, you know, I have done what I can, and we have, as a team here at Blackwater's Edge, reached out, and we're doing what we can to try to get up there and get you guys access to areas that you can't. And I'm not even living there, but I you know, I'm just a bad dude.
You are a bad
dude. I know.
But yeah, let's get something else away.
Yeah, let's get something else away. Here we go.
All right. Oh,
that's cool. That's
slimy.
Cool.
Did it bite you?
Another koozie. Over store koozie.
Uh-oh, somebody gets that. So if you're a beer drink or anything like that and like cheesesteaks, come down and get you a cheesesteak.
Cans of can.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Cans of can.
You're talking about stories, so the next
one. We got to figure out what they're going to say to get the koozie.
Oh, yeah, the koozie.
Come on, man.
All right, so look, I love what?
Koozie. I never didn't know how to spell it.
There you go. I love koozies with a K.
Can I spell it?
No.
K-E-W-Z-I-E?
No, you're wrong.
Oh, man. I was close, though. All right, so look, the next story I want to ask about is you're in Pat's trip. So I heard two insane stories from Pat, one about you going off a cliff and having to winch your vehicle back up, and the other one, something about you laying in the ditch in the middle of a field waiting for a deer to come up on you with a bow 500 yards away from everything in the middle of this field and blasting something. So tell me about those two stories, because they sound like that was a lot of fun and I wanted to be there.
So the Alaska falling off the cliff.
Hold on. Fell off the cliff? This doesn't sound good.
I almost fell off.
Okay, there we go.
How about that? In 2012, I was living in Ketchikan, Alaska for the summer, working as an off-road adventure guide, basically taking tourists out on side-by-side on a tour through the woods and up over the mountains and just showing them a good time. Well, the last day I was on the island before I was coming back to Maryland, I had loaded up my truck and I was trying to go up to the top of this mountain that had been snowed in all summer. One, you know, north side of the slopes, the snow stays. It was drifted in. I tried to plow through the snow. Now, I've got all my belongings in the truck. I'm supposed to get on the ferry at 7 o'clock that night to get home. And I try to get up this road, and I slide in the snow, back the truck up, try it again, slide again, and I slide to the right to the edge and off the edge of the road. And that's a cut in the side of a mountain. And it's probably 500 to 800 foot drop if I rolled the truck over.
That's not bad.
Yeah, man. I'm 1,000.
Would you land to the ferry?
Yeah, land on the ferry. So, you know, there's no cell service where I'm at. I'm probably 15 miles from asphalt road. Probably 12 miles from cell service. And I have I got a winch on the truck, and you know, it was a 2006, I think, Tacoma, with a winch and skid plates and all that kind of stuff. So I just had to hook up the winch, and I had to do a side pull where I ran the winch cable up the cliff to a pulley back to the side rock rails on the truck and pulled the truck sideways. And I'm standing there next to it holding the winch, holding the controller, and I pulled the truck sideways for a little bit. Then I had to re-rig the winch and pull it forward, but I had no trees forward, so I had to tie a cradle with the tow straps around a rock, hook the winch up like that, pulled it forward. Then I had to dig it out of the snow, because now I'm stuck in the snow, so I had to dig the snow out from behind it, and I just put it in R for race and slammed the throttle. And I got my butt out of there and made the ferry in time, but barely. The one thing I learned on that thing is...
That's what I was going to say. What did we learn?
I run solo. Not what you think. I run solo a lot. And when I'm doing this and I'm winching, I realize I've got a bargain bin type tractor store winch on the front of my truck. You know, the $300... Chinese one.
We'll start smoking when you pull on it.
That's right.
And I kind of realized that, you know, when I need this winch, I really need it. Maybe I ought to get something a little different. So the new truck that I put together here now, it's got a name brand good quality winch on the front this time.
That's a good lesson learned. I think the thing I learned from that story was R's for race and not for reverse.
I know. Isn't that like the other story? Not nine, you're fine. Was, 10, you're mine.
I was going to ask you how you got turned around, but I guess it had to do with that R.
That's radius turnaround.
That's right.
So tell me about hunkering down in a ditch with a bow. This sounds good to me.
I know Patrick likes it when I walk up on deer in the middle of the field. I've done that once or twice where you just kind of walk up to them when it's almost dark and get close enough to shoot them. But no, that time Patrick invited me to hunt this little farm in Carroll County, and you know, I'm shooting from a freezer. So this little six-pointer, right. And it was just a corner where three or four fields came together, and it was a ditch, and a bunch of greenbriars. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to lay down here in the ditch.
That's what he told me. He said, yeah, man, the two of us are just walking in out of nowhere. He goes, I'm going to lay in this ditch. And I looked at him like, what did you just say? You're going to lay in the ditch and hunt the deer in the ditch? And he said, sure enough, dude got right in the ditch. So I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. It's just the way I was like, what do you mean? What's wrong with hunting in a ditch? He's like, you just don't understand. It just happened. I was like, I gotcha.
I just laid down in the ditch, kind of sat there for a while. A little while later, this buck come up. Now, I do have to say, that's probably the only deer I've shot that I was shooting up, not down.
That's going to be my next question. Now, tell them how you shot up at it.
Yeah, I mean, I was shooting up with the bow, laying in the ditch.
I mean, are you...
So you just come walking down the field, edge of the ditch.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think a lot of people just learned a new strategy today.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, when he told me that, I said, man,
waiting for you to say grading by the back leg.
He must have grabbed one by the back leg. Let's hear that story.
There is another story with that. I was sitting on the job site, construction job site, and I had probably four or five deer tails in the bed of my truck. And of course, you know, we got the tailgate down and we're looking at the construction plans. And one of the guys looked at me and he's like, what are you doing with those tails? How'd you get those tails? I was like, well, you know, anybody can shoot a deer, but it takes a good hunter to sneak up and cut their tail off.
There you go.
Dude, of course, I was cutting. That's like, I'm going to use that on my MEPS friends.
That's stalking, buddy.
Of course, I'm cutting the tails off of roadkills and using them for, you know, hair jigs.
He doesn't need to know that.
He doesn't need to know that.
That's good stuff.
So hunting wise, you said your favorite thing to do is waterfowl hunting. Where are some of the places you've traveled to chase, you know, waterfowl? And what would you say is your favorite of the waterfowl that you enjoy hunting? You know what I mean? Then we'll ask about guns and ammo after that.
There is something truly romantic about being in a layout line in September and having a small toa geese drop on your head with six decoys out. There's just something cool about that. But with that said, and as much as I love my goose hunting, wood ducks are my all-time favorite. Living up here in Carroll County, you know, I've got, you know, I shoot the rivers, and I'll either sneak boat the rivers or I'll decoy if I've scouted out the wood ducks. But wood ducks are just proud, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the setting. You're in a small river and things like that. And when I was in I was in California this winter. And I was in Sacramento, and I found a nice slough that was just absolutely loaded with ducks. And out there, the limit's five, and all five can be wood ducks. So a couple days, I shot a five wood duck limit out of my kayak.
Very cool.
Yeah,
and that was cool. I mean, the one morning was great. It was, you know, it was four drakes and a hen.
I just love to hear them flying, man, with that.
And so that kind of setting in a wooded slough, you know, with a couple decoys chasing some wood ducks in there, that's probably my favorite there. That's what I like. And greenheads are the staple. You got to give it to them for that. But yeah. So now, as far as the gun,
I would say, what is your weapon of choice?
Weapon of choice is the same one it's been for 20 plus years.
That's why I asked.
I shoot a Browning BPS. I'm a left-handed shooter, so I bought that probably in 1991. And I had the stock cut to fit with a Pacmire accelerator pad put on it. I had it ported, and I got an extra full choke so I can reach out to the geese, which makes it a little tough when it's close stock. But now that gun is pre-camo, so it's spray-painted. And it's ugly as sin, but she shoots like a dream.
That's all that matters.
I think the springs have been replaced in it like twice. It's been re-blued two or three times.
Seen a lot of guys miss with pretty guns.
That's right.
Yeah. And I've had some interesting situations with it where I did a little bit of waterfowl guiding here on the West Shore, and clients come out with their fancy new Berettas and can't hit the broadside of a barn, and I end up whacking them with my gun out there pretty far.
that's like me with the old ugly stick, man. You know what I mean? Same thing.
I never was a fan of the ugly stick. I just thought it was too noodly, but that's just me.
I use it for baiting just because it doesn't break. You know what I mean?
It's still better than corn flour.
Yeah. Well, no. Eddie's right. Corn flour's got us all beat. Okay. He won't spend any more than $9.99. I bet you they're like $10.25 now. You know, with the COVID thing and all this price up.
You gotta add tax on it too.
He buys the $9.99 straight up. Metal reel, metal. It's all metal.
Hook line,
you know?
Everything already.
Hook line, everything already on. As soon as it runs out of line, he don't even go buy a new one. None. He just gives it to somebody. Said, "Here, you want this? Put some line on it. Use it, or I'm throwing it in the trash." You know. So.
Well, and that's one of the cool things I did with the trip across Canada. So I mean, I was doing everything from trout fishing to grayling fishing to smallmouth. You know, doing all that, big rivers, little rivers, and lakes. And I did the whole trip purposefully. So. With two fishing rods, I had TFO medium heavy and an ultra fast, and two pens. I think they were Fury 3s or something reels, and that was the whole purpose. Trip is you don't need a ton of gear. I carry a little pack with basic, with four or five lures you can catch most fish, and I kept it real basic like that, and it worked all the way across. Now the nice thing is when you go. You get into a town in Canada and you're going to go, smallmouth fishing, you hit the local store because you got to buy your fishing license anyhow. So then you start talking to the guy, you find out what the locals are catching, using. You kind of use that as a guide to start with. Mm-hmm. And so you end up buying some tackle like that. But I like to keep it. I'm not a real gear hound. I keep it pretty simple on my gear. I like quality stuff, but I don't need a lot of it. And I just like to go out and play.
let me ask you something. Rob Ballantyne's a good friend of me and mine, Colleen, all them up there. Colleen's asking here in the thread. Hope everybody's doing good up there. I'll be up with Crabs next week. Tell us a quick Dick Fitchett story. So I don't know what that is. That must be something good. So let's hear that.
A good Dick Fitchett story. God bless his heart. Probably the best one was I was opening day of deer season down there on the property, and I'm out on the point stand, and Dick is out in the open marsh, and he shoots at a stick of deer. Stag jumps the creek and beds down. Dick gets up there. He's sitting. Now, you got to remember, Dick was 6'5", 280, big, strong, beefy man. I mean, just an amazing human being. And he
sounds like Andre the Giant.
Sneaks up on the creek, gets up there, shoots a dead stag on the other side of the creek. Now, those creeks down there. He shot this stag. It's done. Now he's got to get to it.
That's right. So that's half the battle.
This is opening day of rifle season. So Dick strips down buck ass naked.
Buck ass naked, not doe ass naked. I was going to ask a dumb question. Go ahead.
Puts his clothes in his hip boots, ties his hip boots together, swings them, tosses them over the creek, jumps in the creek, walks across, gets up. Now I'm watching all this from the from a stand that's, you know, 500 yards away. He stands up, raises his arms, turns in circles, air dries himself, puts his clothes back on, walks over and sneaks up on that deer again, shoots it, and now he's got a buck to get out. And he's standing there, and he starts yelling on top of his lungs.
Is he still naked with a shot?
And we're like, you ain't nobody else going out there to help you. You got it out there. You bring it back.
Well, was he naked when he shot him, Gary was asking you?
No, he put his clothes back. Okay. But it was, I was up, you know, I'm up in a tree watching this whole thing go down.
All right, let's tell you what. Let's give away something else. Gary, you want to give away two more things or what?
Sure.
Let's all right, let's give away two more things. Here we go.
All right. Got something here. What do we got? Oh, a ring frog.
Ooh. Oh, one of Brady Felt's baits. Yeah. There you go. Hey, Brady, there you are. Hey, I forgot to call Brady back again. Brady, you're probably yelling at me again. He messaged me. He forgot to call me. I forgot to call him last night. So, hey, there you are, Brady. We'll help get you some business anyway. I'll call you tonight.
Little green frog.
That's right. What do they got to say? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brady.
I like it. First person says, thank you, Brady, in the comments. You're going to get that frog. Let's get something else in here, Gary. What else we got in here, buddy?
Ooh. There we go. Oh.
Who's it?
Oh. Addiction bait.
Here's what I want you to write in the comments. Because it's an addiction.
I like it.
All right. So, look. Okay. If you haven't been down here, tell them, Eddie, the wall's stocked.
That's right.
You know, and
almost stocked. I hit it hard.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. Gary hit it hard, and I know a couple other people hit it hard. So all you folks that are looking for any addiction stuff you can't find, shoot me a message. I'll let you know if we have it in stock here, and we'll make sure that you get that bait. Andy, I wanna come back and talk a little bit about, you know, some deer hunting and stuff. So here's here's a trick question. Now, you've been around the world. Okay, let's just keep it in America. Mule deer, whitetail, sika. Anything else I'm missing here?
Nope.
Elk. Deer.
Elk. Now let's stay in the deer category. Just deer, no elks. So deer wise, you got mule, well, you got sika, you got whitetail. Well,
fallow. Sambar.
So deer wise, I'm sure everybody likes to kill elk. What is the deer that you most want to chase?
I'm chasing mule deer for the first time this September.
So, where are you going for that at?
I'm going to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a muzzleloader hunt with a Thompson Center Hawkins open sights percussion cap.
Oh, so very cool.
It's a 100-yard game.
If you don't know our friend Jim Zumba, reach out to him. He can probably help you with some stuff out there if you're looking to.
Jim's a friend of mine. He's a hero and a friend of mine.
He is,
Jim,
man.
Is just
good.
An awesome guy.
That's always everybody's answer.
I know, man.
Do you
have a Jim Zumbo story like Rob had? You want to tell us one? Go ahead. Jim Zumbo, hope you're out there and you're listening, my friend.
I got a Jim story. So, you know, I'm just a local yicker from Maryland, and I start writing for magazines, and I go to Outdoor Writers Convention, National Outdoor Writers Convention, and one evening we're in hospitality suite, and I think it was Federal Ammunition, and I'm sitting there talking to an old newspaper writer from Illinois or Indiana. And I had been to a lecture earlier that day of Jim Zumbo talking. Now, I'm of the age, I'm 54. Jim was the man in the magazines in the day. I grew up reading Jim Zumbo. He was my
Everybody
hero.
Did, I think. You know what I mean?
I mean, you know, him and Jack O'Connor, they were the guys I looked up to, not football or baseball players. These were the guys I all looked up to. So it was a big enough deal that I got to, you know, was at a lecture where he's talking. Well, that night, I'm in this hospitality suite, and Jim walks in the door, and I cannot remember that newspaper writer's guy's name right now. But anyhow, he yells across the room, "Hey, Jim, have you met Andy?" And Jim said, "No, I haven't." So he come over, and the next thing you know, I'm sitting there drinking bourbon with Jim Zumbo. To me, that was just really cool. And I've met Jim, and we've talked several times. I don't know if he would really remember who I am, but he's been a big influence in me, and he's an amazing guy.
So I got to tell you, when he came here, you know, to visit, you know, I've never really been big into the hunting side. You know, Eddie and Gary can tell you that I've always been a fisherman my whole life. You know, I tested waters here, tested waters there. But, you know, a friend had reached out and said they were coming to town. They had a good friend of theirs that I was bringing fishing. Could I help them out? I'm thinking, yeah, man, I'll help you out. You're my friend. I have no idea who this guy really is. You know what I mean? And I was talking to a friend later on in the day, and I said, hey, man, I says, my buddy's coming down and bringing this guy with him, and I'm taking him out. And he goes, dude, do you know who that is? I was like, nah, I guess some dude I'm taking fishing. He goes, well, you better go Google his name and figure out who he is before you go out there. So I go and Google everything. I'm looking, I'm like, oh, my God, somebody famous is coming to go fishing. Look at this. This is crazy. I call Eddie. I call Gary. Hey, man, would you believe this, man? A badger's coming to town. He's bringing blah, 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 blah. I mean, I just about lost my shit. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, man, this is big for us, you know, because we don't get to really hang out with people like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, when he came here and we got taken, man, that was really, really good. Gary, what do you think? You want to give away two more things real quick, and then we'll give away something else before we get out of here with
the special one.
Yeah. Let's give away two more things, and then we'll get into the special stuff.
All righty. Oh, there's a big bag of something. Ooh. Some Zoomies.
Zoom horny toads.
Ooh. Now, we know some people that like them horny toads, so. Oh, yeah.
But these are Zoom horny toads. Not the same.
Hey, I got the best line, if you let me use it. No, it's not bad. It could be a lot worse. I tell you what.
No, Little John story.
Toads make me horny. Put that in the comments. First person to put that in there, you win that bag of horny toads. What else we got? Should we dig in here and get something else again, you think, or what? Here, one more. Grab one more out of here. Let's do one more. All right.
A sticker.
Oh, there you go. Mr. Brady, somebody gets another that's upside down. That's okay. We'll give away upside down stickers too.
I should have looked on the screen.
I don't know. I can't read that word at the top or ever pronounce it.
Nantaberry.
Right. So how about I love Nantaberry? And you gotta put that in the comments right now. And you can win that sticker and you can pick that up here at the Wolford store on your next trip. Now look, for those of you folks that have been asking us, can we ship something to you if I don't live here? Can we do this? Can we do that? Look. Here's how we're going to handle that. I don't mind going over next door and shipping something or something like that if you're willing to pay for the shipping. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to pay for the shipping and you're going to do that, you know, we'll figure out a way to reimburse this through a PayPal or something like that, then we'll go ahead and we'll ship it to you. So we want to make sure everybody gets their prizes, that we're not just giving away things and, you know, you can't get it because that's not fair. So we're trying to figure out a way to handle that objective. And I think that's probably the best way to do it. What do you think, Eddie?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably the best way.
All right. So toads make me horny. I mean, that was good. Right, you liked it, didn't you, Andy? You liked it?
Oh, I liked it. Okay.
So
but now you were talking about deer hunting, and we kind of got sidetracked on Jim Thumbo.
Yeah, sorry.
I did enjoy in the late 80s, early 90s, when nobody else was really chasing sitkas a whole lot. It wasn't the popular game that it is now. I spent a lot of time down towards Toddville and Bishop's Head, down off Wesley Church Road, that whole area, just having a ball with the sitka deer. I mean, that you know, early muzzleloader, October muzzleloader season, chasing bugle and sitkas is a lot of fun. Now, take that sitka deer and turn it into an 800-pound animal, and now you have elk hunting.
That's exactly right.
It's probably good we don't have them here. I don't know how you'd ever get one out of the marsh.
Dude, that guy would be peeling his skin off, too. Hell with the clothes. he'd have been bones coming out of the marsh.
I did that. The last 18 on caribou hunt in Alaska was the first time that I quartered and packed out an animal. And the guys on TV make it look easy, and it ain't. I mean, we shot a pair of caribou at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was 6 o'clock at night. So we had all and it took six or seven loads to get them out. And that was only about a mile and a half packed. We only had to pack them out about a mile and a half.
Wow.
And of course there you're doing a gutless method where you're not gutting them out. You just peel the hide and start quartering them up. My mistake is, and my lesson learned there was don't He-Man it and take two hindquarters, throw it in a pack and then walk out because you don't want to take two trips. It ruined my back for about 3 days.
Sure. Yeah. No doubt in my mind. That's rough.
So before we get out of here today, you know, I wanted to talk about the books. You know, I want you to tell the people about, you know, your two books that are out now, where they can find them. You know, they can hear Andy's adventures. They can see what you're doing. Talk about your Facebook page. You got any platforms you want these people to come look at and check you out and see how you're doing and, you know, learn more about Andy and what he's all about. You know what I mean? Because I'll tell you what, everything I've seen about you everywhere, brother, it's kind of like a Jim Zumbo story to a guy like me. You know what I mean? So after Pat introduced us and we connected and I went and looked and I showed Eddie and, you know, we looked at all that stuff. We were like, my gosh, man, you know, this is
gotta get him on here.
This is amazing, you know, and look, this has really been for us an amazing podcast. And I hope for sure that you have enjoyed yourself here. And,
oh man, most definitely.
You know, I like I said, next week if you've got some time, me and Gary, you know, Gary even said you know, we'll figure out a way to get you out there if you want to come down and put a couple snakeheads in your belly. You know, we'll make sure that
sure.
we get on some fish and we spend the day with you. You know what I mean? That would be a lot of fun to.
I appreciate that.
Hey, there's Patrick at the end. Now, Patrick, we're far from being over. We still got to talk to Rob Ballantyne, but there's Patrick saying,
"I saw that."
He says, "I just drove 2 hours for a cheesesteak sub."
That's what I'm talking about.
And look. Look, Andy knows the story behind that, and we can get into that off record and talk about that later. But look, Pat, I love you. Thank you. We appreciate you making the connection, helping us out. And maybe the next cheesesteak will charge you double. I love you, man. So before we go today and let you off the hook, let me ask you this. Is there anything that you want to leave us with? I want you to talk about the book real quick, the platforms, how they can order it. But is there anything that we haven't talked about here that you want to talk about or mention before we go?
No, we've pretty much covered it all. I mean, the big thing is both of my books are available on Amazon. 2 Months in a Tent, which is my daily journal of the trip across the Canada and Alaska. And then the other book is Flowing with the River's Current, which is a series of short stories about hunting and fishing and hiking and kayaking, those kind of things. And it's more about going out on a hunt and then having a life experience and how that experience that was just supposed to be a hunt ends up being a life experience that you learn to apply to other things. It's a lot of, you know, little nature stuff thrown in there. And that book, some of those short stories were in the Fishing Hunting Journal. And a couple other magazines, and some of those shorts, I think it's about a dozen or 20. I don't remember now. different short stories. I've got a couple more coming that are on the same line as that, but both those books are available on Amazon. 2 Months in a Tent and Following the River's Current. As far as my social media presence, my blog, Augie's Adventures, Augie comes from Augenball because most people can't pronounce it. I haven't been doing a whole lot on that. I have a separate career as, I work for FEMA.
Okay.
I wasn't going to put that out there, but Patrick kind of told me a little bit about that and things that you did. Yeah, and I was like, man, that's so cool, man. Like that just helps his cause. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm a consultant for FEMA. So I work part of the year for them. And then I'm out playing the other part of the year. Mm-hmm. When you do that kind of work, it's a little difficult to run a blog about all these fun things you're doing. So I've kind of backed off on that a little bit, but I have a Facebook and an Instagram presence. But mainly I'm focusing on the books and going out and doing stuff. I probably should spend more time on Facebook than I do.
It sounds to me like you're living, man.
Yeah, that's exactly
and that's,
right.
I think, something a lot of us wish we had more time to do with everything that we're doing. So I'm pretty jealous that you get to do it.
I want to touch on that for a minute because one of the things, and, you know, born and raised in Maryland, didn't really leave the state a whole lot until mid-2000s, like 12, 13, when I went to Alaska the first time. Maryland has more opportunity than most of the Western states. I mean, the different types of opportunities you got, fishing and hunting and the long seasons. I mean, you can start bow hunting in September through January, February, you know,
yeah,
and
buddy.
the number of the waterfowling is world renowned and you've got, you know, the sick of deer, the whitetails and then all the fishing opportunities from, you know, from the ocean. I mean, literally from the oceans to the creeks. I mean, you know, we used to do stuff where we would set off to go catch a bunch of stripers out in the surf and then try to catch a brook trout in Garrett County the next day.
Yeah.
Just cut, you know, I mean, dude, so
not to cut you off, but that's like me here. Like, people ask me all the time about why I stay here, and it's exactly what you just said. I can be down Hooper's Island slamming rockfish, slamming trout. I can come up the Blackwater, catch crappie and catfish and snakeheads, and I can come a little further and get the trout streams and things like that, and then I got lakes and reservoirs. So just like you said, dude,
we can only afford told a couple times a month.
do you see this crap, man? I mean, this is nonstop. I'm just kidding. I love you, dude. That was a good one. But I mean, seriously, I mean, exactly. Well, there's fallow deer on the Eastern Shore a lot of people don't know. And if you do your homework, you might be able to find one. You know, I mean, that's just, you hit the nail on the head, man. There's just so much diversity here. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the neat thing about Maryland. But with that said, you know, the West is pretty amazing.
It is.
If you get an opportunity to go out west, if you get an opportunity to go to Alaska, take the opportunity and do it. One of the things that you said earlier, Kaz, that I really liked was, you don't know if you don't go.
And thanks a lot.
That is a great statement on a lot of different levels, because if you stay home because the weatherman's going to call for it to rain, and it never rains, doesn't rain, you missed out on a good fishing day.
And that's so, my first wife. I said, you're going to be here when I get back? She said, if you don't go, you don't know.
Wow. Oh, man.
I love it. But there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, and that's the thing is, I don't have a lot of fancy gear. Heck, I don't even own a house right now. I live in a 19-foot trailer, but I'm out having fun.
There's nothing wrong with living in a trailer,
and
brother.
I leave next weekend, and I'll spend a week in Nashville, a couple weeks in Arkansas. I'm spending 7 or 8 weeks in Utah, and then I go up to Colorado for 3 months, and I'll be there, and then I'll come back to Maryland. And the plan is to be back in Maryland around October 1st, and then I'll be here through hunting season, because I've missed the last couple hunting seasons here. So I really want to spend some time here and then I don't know where I'm going after that. I'm contemplating the idea of going to Florida and going down there for the summer or the winter fishing. So I don't know, but you don't know if you don't go.
I have two sayings that ever since I've started the Snakehead Pages that I've used. And the first one is, you don't know if you don't go. And the typical story is here. Let's talk about yesterday. I had a friend call me. He says, I don't know if I should go fishing or not. And I said the same thing. I said, well, you know what I say all the time? He said, I know. I said, so why not go find your bridge, go tuck under, get out the rain and go fishing if you ain't got nothing to do, or just take a nap. He goes, you know what? I didn't think about that. I know a bridge. I can go sit on and catch snakeheads right now. You know what? He went, and he smoked them in the pouring rain. You don't know if you don't go. My other one is, what is it, Eddie?
They can't all be big, but they can all be fun.
Right. You know, guys always say to me all the time, well, if I drive down there, am I going to catch big snakeheads? Because I don't want to drive if I can't catch my first dragon. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Come on down. They can't all be big, but they can all be fun. There's a positive statement to every, and that's how I'm trying to, like, live. And I think I see that in you too. You know, you find the positive in the shit, not the negative in the shit. So when somebody asks you a loaded question, give them a nice positive answer. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you're doing the right thing.
Well, and that's,
man,
one of the things I learned as a kid, and I taught my kids, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yep. Simple as that.
I was watching National Geo Channel a couple years ago, and they were spotlighting one of the most famous photographers that they have that's still working for him now. And they asked him where he lived. He said he lived in D.C. And he said, where at? And he lives in Rock Creek Park in a tent. Because he's outside so much that he doesn't feel right being in an apartment or anything when he comes home. So he lives in a tent in Rock Creek Park.
Wow, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but this has been a great show.
Absolutely.
I know we've got other things we got to get to today, like two more of the biggest giveaways you've ever seen in your life.
Yep.
Andy, I want to say thank you. I think we all want to say thank you.
Absolutely. And, appreciate you, coming on, man.
We're so glad you came today. This is a great show. We're going to jump out of here, and we're going to bring Rob in. So please make sure, even though you're not on the show, if you have any questions for Rob, being that he loves you so much, shoot him a couple of questions. Let Colleen shot you a few. How's that sound?
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I appreciate you guys having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Hey, thank you, man. I got one thing to say. Andy, go, Andy. You got this, man. I'm telling you. Just looking at all your stuff, bro, like, I looked today at a lot of stuff, and I felt like I was right there with you on your adventure. So, folks, look, if you're looking for something captivating, if you're looking for an emotional connection to the outdoors, it's right in front of you. You've heard it today from this man here. And if you want to read two good books, he told you where to find them.
That's right.
All right.
Andy, I'll tell you what, we're going to cut to a commercial here.
That's right.
Okay, and we're going to get with Rob, and... thank you, and I'll be in touch with you soon. Before you get out of state next week, get down here, bring Patrick down with you, and I'll take you guys over to a little private honey hole. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. Appreciate it, guys.
See you, man.
All right,
see you.
Bye-bye. All right, so look, everybody.
Here it is.
This is it. Get ready. I don't know about you.
I'm pretty excited about this.
Something pretty crazy is going on here in Dorchester County. And I think we might have found somewhat of a solution anyway.
That's fine.
Yeah. You know, here's the good thing. Rob, we're watching the video right now live on Facebook. Not sure if you can see it, the new swim bait that we're releasing. We're gonna run it through two times. We'll run it through again right after this again so everybody can see that. So here's the thing, folks. So we've got a new swim bait that's coming out. It's called the Snakehead Destroyer. That's what we've called it, the Snakehead Destroyer swim bait, after our live bait that we sell.
Let him see it there.
It's a 3.5-inch bait. And this is the thing that we talked about, you know, like talking with you out there, you know, we're talking about other brands and size seemed to be one of the biggest issues. You guys have heard me here for the last year talking about twister tails and 3-inch size. Okay. I've been able to really, really find an application for a smaller bait than what's typically being offered out here on the market. The good thing about this bait is that this bait is literally small enough now at 3.5 inches, okay, that I can use this as a swim bait, but it's not just a great swim bait. It's the perfect, the perfect size for your chatterbaits. Now, y'all know I like that 1/8-ounce size chatterbait. Now, I can tell you today, we caught fish on the bait. Okay, we went out today, we put her to work.
Second cast.
I can tell you that Gary caught a fish. And
it'll be on blog, I'll post them on Blackwater.
We're going to share that a little later on. And I can tell you that we used this as a trailer on one of Darryl Willie's splatterbaits.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And not only was the action amazing, it flat out catches fish.
It just looks good.
You know, so the thing that I really like about this bait, Eddie, if you want to run that one more time.
Here we go.
Here's the thing. We'll get it up and we'll let you see it again. We'll run through a couple times. I want to talk about Brian Dolph while we're doing this because, you know, we had Brian on the show. We started talking. You know, I talked to him a little bit about, you know, what we use for bait here, what we're looking for in a lure, what we're looking for in color. We're not offering 35,000 colors. That is the Snakehead Destroyer swim bait. That's it.
One color.
You know, that's Snakehead Destroyer. It's going to be, you're not going to have to worry about, is it this color? No, it's one color. And you know what? You're going to see lots of people catching a lot of fish on this thing. So, should I tell them?
Tell them.
Okay, so Saturday, okay, I'm going to come here to the store personally myself, and from 11 o'clock until 1 o'clock, I will be here. Eddie will be here. Gary, if you can come and join us, Gary will be here, and we're going to introduce you to the Snakehead Destroyer, which you just saw on the screen, introducing the Snakehead Destroyer. So, again, here's the bait. I mean,
it's just beautiful.
I mean, it's gorgeous.
And yep. A little bit higher. There you go.
The best thing about the bait,
man, it rocks.
Not just that, but see the tail here?
So the
concept and the design on the tail is much different than a lot of products that are being offered out there. The other good thing about this, if you look at the tail, is There you go. They're raising the mic for me so you can see. So the shape of this tail here, now watch. Now I'm not even in the water, okay? The swing that is on this thing is just unreal, man. And durability, I mean, these things, they're strong, man. I mean, I'm pulling on that thing. I can't break it, man. Snakeheads bite and don't let go. That's all I'm going to tell you. So, Rob, where you at, baby? You here with us? Rob?
Right here, buddy.
Okay.
Right here.
All right, so look, folks, we're going to give away a pack of those on Saturday before we start with Rob. And Gary, you can pick this time. What do you want to write in the comments to win a snakehead destroyer swim bait?
Snakehead destroyer. Can't get much more simple than that. It's
easy enough.
There you go. Put it in the comments. Two words. Snakehead destroyer.
Those old school baits are sweet, huh?
Oh, yeah.
They are. They are. I'll tell you what. I'm really glad we made the connection with Brian.
And nice fellow.
This whole collaboration is really going to change the game. I'm telling you, man. So, Rob, you and me both know, and me and you talk a lot. For those of you who don't know, Rob's a biologist. He's been helping me with some stuff here. We've been doing work on some aging. We've been doing some work on stomach content. We've been doing some work on otolith, a little bit of everything. So I first want to thank you for everything that you're doing to give back to our community, you know, and help us with the cause that we have here in Dorchester County. Now, a lot of people don't know, but, you know, Rob does a lot of stuff that, you know, he can't talk about with me and things like that. But, you know, he heard me a couple years ago, you know, when we were starting to voice about the shad lift and closing down the shad run and not moving them over the dam and things like that. And he knows how much it meant to us to try to find some kind of a solution to keep these shad migrating. Not just him, but his team and everybody that he works with, too. So I really want to say thank you for the work that you guys are doing. And a lot of people don't understand maybe specifically what this is all about. So that was the purpose today, Rob, of reaching out to you and saying, hey, man, can you give us a couple minutes to talk about the lift, what's going to go on, how it's going to be going, just so that people out here kind of understand the thought process that's gone into this, you know, why we can't run that big ladder on the other side, you know? The floor is yours. The floor is yours. So I'm gonna, everybody, if you got a question, now's the time. Put it in the comments while Rob's here and we can ask him the question. If you're not here and you watch the podcast later, reach out to me and we'll figure out how to get you the answers that you need. I'm not going to give out Rob's personal information and all that, but here's your opportunity right now to ask the question. So Rob, break it down for us. Conowingo and Hopewood Dam, what's going on up there?
Yeah, no, man, I appreciate it. I'd love to answer anyone that has questions beyond what's today. Everyone that knows me knows I love Conowingo and Susquehanna River, or man, I fished that since I was a kid with my dad, shad fishing. It's a special place for me. It's where I basically cut my teeth as a fisheries biologist working at the fish lift there at Conowingo in the late 80s, early 90s. It's an interesting situation. I know we're short on time, and kudos to Andy. Andy's a good friend of mine. I haven't seen him for years, and he's a great dude. Great interview. I miss him. People, a lot of people will say, why do you care about shad? You know, I mean, you can't keep them, you can't eat them, but the historic value of that fish, I mean, you want to put a non-monetary value on a fish. I mean, shad in the Chesapeake Bay and Pennsylvania and really the entire East Coast, Connecticut River, Delaware River, Merrimack River, all the major, all the way down to the St. John's River, the PD River, Yakin PD River, all up and down the East Coast, major river systems, shad or anadromous fish. They live in the ocean. They come into the freshwater to spawn. It's a very unique situation. You know, I mean, it's typical of Pacific salmon. Everyone appreciates that out there. American shad basically do the same thing, and they migrate up the rivers in the spring. At one point in time, American shad were harvested in Pennsylvania in the Susquehanna River, Pennsylvania and Maryland, at the tune of 2 million pounds in Pennsylvania a year and 1.5 million pounds in Maryland a year. It was the most important fishery in the Chesapeake Bay at the turn of the century, which is amazing when you think about that. I really, really want to say real quick about shad fishing. If you've never done it, you need to go try it because it's an amazing connection to the history. And it's cool. It's easy. They're not hard to catch. They're fun. They jump. It's a great time. Anyhow, quickly, speaking of the fish list, I know you want me to get to the point, so I'm going to get to the point. You know me. I could do a whole podcast.
You're like me, bro. Me and you get talking. We're hung up for hours, so it's okay with me. It's Eddie and Eddie's got kids to worry about. Not me. I got two dogs. They'll be all right.
I got a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old sitting right here with me. One's yellow and one's chocolate. So anyhow, so they got, so Conowingo, they started passing fish in the at the West Fish Lift in 1972. So the West Fish Lift is the one by the parking area, right there when you pull into the dam in the parking area. That's the West Fish Lift. They started passing fish there in 1972. And when I'm talking about fish, I'm talking about shad and river herring, aka yellowwater and blueback herring. So anyhow, in 1980, Maryland closed the shad fishery commercially and recreationally. So they recognized that shad were in trouble. And then through many, many negotiations, settlements, all that stuff, the East Fish Lift was built. So the East Fish Lift, if no one's ever been there, or you've been there and not sure what you're talking about, the East Fish is basically right there by the wing wall. It looked like it's out in the middle of the dam. So yep. It's between the generating units and the series of spill gates that go east. So that's the East Fish Lift. So anyhow, they started operation with East Fish Lift. Now, the difference was the West Fish Lift was a trap and haul, truck and transport, whatever term you want to use.
Right.
They lift the hopper up, they dump in a tank, a bunch of people like me go in there when I was a kid. You go in there with these nets and you scoop through the gazillion gizzard shad and you pull the American shad in there. They get put in the tank, get held in the tank, truck. They get trucked up river above Holtwood, Safe Harbor, York Haven, all the way. A lot of them we put up at Safe Harbor and up by Harrisburg. So anyhow, in an effort to try to reinitiate that run in the river. So that's the way it was done back when. But then in 1991, they completed the East Fish Lift, but I don't think they actually started operating it until like 1997. At that time, Holtwood, which is the next dam up, Safe Harbor, the next one up, started also operating fish lifts. So they started this whole section of river passing fish. So let me get to the point that you wanted to ask. The point was, what are they going to do this year? So last year, can never get to the point, but last year,
it's okay.
You know, they shut down the fish lift. They didn't open the fish. The fish lift supposedly operate from April 1st till June 15th, cover the whole shad run. Now, there are stipulations in there, and if flows are too high, they don't operate, you know? So that does happen some springs. They get a big, huge flood, and they don't know how to operate the fish lift. So anyhow, this in 2020, because of the COVID, they didn't open the fish lift until May, like May 12th, I think it was. They opened the fish lift, which is the East Fish Lift, volitional passage. They lift them up in a hopper, and then the fish are free to swim out a channel into the reservoir above. So that's what makes a difference from the West Fish Lift, which is truck and transport. The East Fish Lift, they lift them up, the fish swim out into the reservoir and go upstream. They open that fish lift up, and there they are, snakeheads. You know, I think they observe 35 snakeheads altogether. They removed 14 of them, but 21 of them were passed upstream. Now, the advantage of volitional passage, which is ideally what you want, even in salmon fisheries, salmon rivers out west, you want the fish to come up. You don't want, number one, the expense of truck and transporting them, but you also want them to cover those river miles in between the truck and transport. So anyhow, that's why the volitional passage basically means on your own, you know. They started that volitional passage there, so. When that happened in 2020, they shut the resource agencies, basically Fish and Wildlife Service, PA, the DEP, or Fish and Boat Commission, and Maryland DNR. You know, they wanted them to stop passing those fish. They did. People were scared, you know. I mean, they don't want the implications of spreading snakeheads all the way up, you know, to Harrisburg and beyond.
New York. I mean, look at all the regulations that New York's putting in place now. I mean, we can't even send them in there anymore, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you want to talk about an interesting part about shad migration. American shad in the Susquehanna River before it started being dammed traveled over 300 miles to Binghamton, New York. 300 wow. miles.
Yep. And I've talked to Jim Thompson about that before. I mean, I was shocked when he gave me a little education on some of that. I'm blown away.
Yeah, and prior to that, they made it. It's thought that they made it all the way up near Cooperstown, New York, which is almost 600 miles.
Wow!
Now, the largest known migration of fish, anadromous fish, in the world is in the Snake River, in Idaho, and those fish go from the Pacific Ocean to Redfish Lake in Idaho, 900 miles.
Good God,
that's wicked!
And wow, man!
And it's like 10,000 foot elevation gain across that, and 8 major hydro dams. So,
yeah, I tell you, I learned so much here, man.
That is an amazing feat. And what's amazing, not only that the adults get there, is that the juveniles get out of that whole system, right, 900 miles and go back out to the ocean to grow up and come back. I mean, that's insane.
But when they come back, they don't remember it being that hard.
Hey, it's like all uphill, man. It's like us, Gary. Every year gets harder.
Yeah, I had to swim out of here. It was uphill both ways. Right.
I was in the marsh naked, man.
So we know that snakeheads have crossed up the fish lift. So what are we planning on doing about it this year?
Yep, good. Thank you very much, Eddie, for keeping me on track.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
He does that me all the time. Don't get mad.
So the resource agencies, aka the Fish and Wildlife Service and state agencies, they recommended that this year that the Exelon, the owner of Conowingo, that they will operate the West Fish Lift, which is the truck and trap fish lift, which has basically been in mothballs for a good long time. Sort those fish, just like we used to do in the 80s, 90s. You're going to sort those fish. You're going to pull the shad and herring out. They're going to hold them in a tank, put them in a truck, take them upriver. Move the snakeheads. You're going to remove the blue catfish. Remove.
Oh, we're losing you, Rob.
I heard what he said. He said we're going to remove the snakeheads, we're going to remove the blue cats, and we're going to remove the flatheads. Is that what I heard, right, Rob?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. So the
Rob's up in PA, so the service a little hitty all.
So in the agreement, basically, now we issued an order on this, not myself, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that regulates a lot of the hydros in the country. You know, that order is on 30-day rehearing. So today is the last day of the rehearing period from when that was issued. Okay. So basically, it's not set in stone until the rehearing period is issued. So I don't want to say that it's set in stone at this moment.
Oh, but
basically, you know, unless something comes in by midnight tonight, that's where they're going to operate. So,
okay.
You know, so that's good news.
Basically, I think that's pretty good. I mean, I know it's very conservative. I know a lot of people are going to be like, 21 of them got up. It's over. Forget about it. Don't worry about it. That's not the way you approach it.
Here's the thing, though. If this is the first, is this the first time they observed them going up the ramp?
So I have friends that have caught them in Conowingo Creek for more than two years. Okay?
We've heard a few rumors of being caught above the dam already. So it's not like this is new to begin with, but we're still going to do our best.
The same token, like I hear what Rob's saying, you know, if we can, whatever we can remove from the equation is better than no nothing from the equation, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. You definitely want to keep doing your part, but.
And that's the thing I think people need to pay attention to here. No matter what we're doing, everybody's going to try to find a fault somewhere. They're going to find something where they're going to say, hey, I don't like this. But here's some help's better than no help.
Well, not just that. I mean, people are human. Yeah. People make mistakes.
Yeah, you correct the mistakes as best you can. Right, right.
So, and that's where we're at.
We spoke about this last week, Kaz. It's like, imagine if those thousands of snakeheads moved out of Drawbridge and P. Wallace and all that stuff every year.
Every weekend.
Imagine if that wasn't happening. I mean, you know, you got to fight the fight is the bottom line. That's what science is all about. Conservation is all about, you know, if everyone threw up their hand and said, you know what, mountain lions are just going to have to go extinct. Who cares, you know? Who cares? Nobody eats mountain. You know what I mean? You got it.
I do.
It's about perspective. It's about conservation. Anyhow, But the other thing I wanted to add to that real quickly was they're going to do that at Conowingo. I know Fisher up there. I know it's been before Exelon or anyone else realized it. You know, fishermen know it. Of course, the ground game's always the best info, you know?
Yep.
But on a regulatory perspective, you have to do something also. You have to respond to it. And I'm right. very, you know, myself, I think it's great, you know?
No, you're exactly right.
I think it's wonderful. So,
in accordance with that as well, Holtwood, which is the next one up, you know, when I used to live in Maryland, I couldn't have told you that Holtwood Dam was in Pennsylvania. I didn't care what was north of that line, you know what I mean? It didn't matter to me. But, you know, there is really a connection when you live in a bordering state. I know we like to have state hate and all that kind of stuff, but the bottom line is, you know, that river runs through three states, and it's meant a lot to a lot of people for a long time. But anyhow, Holtwood's the next one up, and Holtwood is not going to pass fish at all this year. And they're also putting aside they have a telemetry study going on up there about how the fish approach the dam and all that kind of stuff. And that's going to be put on hold for a year. So the bottom line of all this stuff, I hope I answered your question.
How far do they have to travel up the river before the spawning starts? Is that going to put a complete halt to it? Is it even worth keeping Conowingo open at that point, or can they?
They will spawn. Shad. Yeah. Basically, you know, biologists in especially in salmon research and shad research, they kind of calculate the available optimal spawning habitat within a river. You know, and right. you know, the further you get upstream, the more available habitat you have.
Okay.
Either crossed through or approached. So. In this case, you know, do the shad spawn in the river? Sure they do, you know. Yeah. If their objective is, you know, when they're ready to spawn, they're going to spawn is the bottom line. So,
see, I think some of the people, Rob, and this is what I've heard, you know, from some people, you know, like, well, what's the sense of moving them up one dam in between two dams that silted in so bad where the water quality on that end so crappy or whatever. But here's my point with you again, dude. If they get over there and they get in that deeper side, which is deeper than, you know, most of the water below Conowingo Dam, then some of that may have a fighting chance to get back out. You know what I'm saying? So it definitely has value. That's the thing I think people don't see. There's definitely value here, you know. And I have to say, I know we're getting into an hour and a half, and we don't want to lose everybody out right. here. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing, Rob. Kudos to you. Kudos to everybody you've worked with. And, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. I mean, gosh, man, we appreciate you, dude. And you've helped us so much. It's not even funny. And like I said to Eddie, you know, here in the next couple of weeks, once we start getting things going up there, let's get you down here and talk about how it's going. How's that sound?
Yeah, man. Sounds great. For sure. Love you guys. I mean, the podcast has been great.
Thank you.
Congrats to you, Eddie, on the cheesesteak day.
I appreciate that, man. It was a crazy, hectic day yesterday.
Gary, man, I love your comedic humor, man.
You like watching me get whooped, that's all.
Every podcast, that guy cracks me up, and I'm not, it's hard to make me laugh, man.
Oh, it's easy to find something funny about us.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Rob, we appreciate you. We're going to jump out of here, and look, I'll give you a call in the next few hours just so we can reconnect and have a good one, brother.
Thanks, guys. Hug your dogs today.
I will. I hug them all the time, brother. Thank you, Rob. Thanks, Rob.
Take care, buddy.
See you guys.
Okay, so. Now, we're going to get out of here. We're going home. I'm starving like Marvin, eating two Twix. I'm, you know, if I don't eat soon, I'll be hula-hooping through a Cheerio.
All right, you got to give away crabs still, and then we've got to announce the winners.
So we're not giving away the crabs today. The crabs will be given away on next week's podcast. It's everybody who shares this week, you know, for here and for the crab stand over the weekend, because the crab stand's going to open up next Friday, I think. The way things are looking here.
Win something we haven't told them about yet?
Yeah, we got a couple winners that we haven't talked about yet.
Why don't you read them off here for me? All right, before we do that, let's update everybody who's won here today their stuff. Gary, here, you go ahead and read off the names. My mouth hurts from talking so much.
Gary, better get your glasses. I write small.
Here.
There you go, buddy. Hold on. I want to try. Now it's your turn to burn me.
You've lost your mind.
Okie dokie. Hyperlastic was bred Jotar, set up.
Kapow!
Yeah, Koozie. Pat yep. William.
Kapow!
Where's that? There you go. Nantaburi, is that how you say that?
Yep.
Nantaburi.
Justin Erling.
Kapow!
Addiction.
The Addiction Baits.
Yeah, Addiction Bait. Eric Brown.
Kapow!
The Zunes.
The Horny Toads.
Horny Toads. Mandy
Van Kapow!
The sticker.
The Nantaburi sticker.
Yep, is Jeremy DeLoins. I can't.
Kapow!
I think it's DeLoins.
Okay. We'll post up in comments at the end, everybody, yep. again.
And the swim bait is Carl Ward.
Kapow!
There we go.
Carl. All right. All right. So, look, everybody, like, share, comment the whole podcast, and I'm going to give away a bushel of crabs next weekend to somebody. I'm going to draw the winners, all the names off of this post and the post due this weekend at the crab stand, and one of you good friends are going to win a bushel on opening day, and I don't care how expensive the crabs are, we're going to make sure they win some.
Don't forget, come see us Saturday.
That's right, Saturday, 11 to 1. I got one more announcement,
though. You got two more. Yep, two more. So go with your first one now. Make sure you got the second one. The
first one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Tournament registration is live.
Yeah. What? Whoa, you can register for the tournament now?
Tournament registration is live.
You can register for the tournament now, everybody.
We will have that link up as soon as the podcast is over. Okay. I'll have it posted on Blackwater's Edge. We'll have the event live. Everything's going to be ready to roll. We're ready.
Before you do that, you're going to run through the registration and the discount and how that works again so they understand that.
So the way it's set up is we have to do the discount manually. It just couldn't do it on the platform. We tried and tried and tried and just couldn't work. And that was the big holdup with getting the registration live, and it just ended up not working. So what we're going to do is basically, if you're in all four tournaments, you're in the club for free.
Yep. So pay for all four tournaments, yep. and you got free club membership,
that's
baby.
It. Done deal. Yep.
Kapow, Eddie!
Easy enough.
That's pretty good, right, Gary?
When's our first club meeting?
It's going to be the end of May.
So what we were thinking, we were talking, I hope you can help here too. We're thinking do the first tournament, yes. you know what I mean? And then we'll use the first club meeting.
We still have so much to do for this first tournament we've got to do the club meeting after the tournament.
So we'll have the club meeting after the tournament, but we'll use the platform or the area that we're going to use for the club meeting to do the prizes and to do all that.
Yep.
And if they can't make it to the club, at least they can see on the platform and the promotional, you know, advertising.
We'll have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, this is going to be so much fun, man. Yep. Snakehead fishing should be fun, yep. you know, so we're going to make sure we got that. You had some visitors today.
Oh, I did.
So, you know, it's good. It's good that the work that we're doing is being noticed. Mm-hmm. And it's good that we're giving back to the community. And it's good to pass on good things to people. So, Eddie, let's pass on something good that happened today.
So, today, Congressman Andy Harris stopped by the store today. We had a nice little chat. He had some other things going on. They stopped in for breakfast before they moved on about their day. We talked snakeheads. And for those of you who don't know, Congressman Harris has worked really hard on getting funds allocated for snakehead population control research, the whole nine yards.
Gender study. Yeah. For snakeheads, that is.
Yeah, that's right. So, but he's worked really hard, and I think that it's $250,000 he's got allocated towards it's fantastic. Yeah. So we're going to get more.
And we're lobbying for more. For more. You know,
more information is always better for these snakeheads because we still don't know everything. I mean, we've got a long ways to go. We know a sliver.
Here we are again. You know,
and he's working.
We're
hard
already
for us to
seeing.
Get this.
Remember what did we say we were so concerned about last year with what we saw in our catch as far as ratio goes,
yep.
male to female.
Yep.
We were like 8 females to every 2 males. Yep. It's still like that yep. so far. I mean, it's so you guys. This is what I want to know up to the north. We're trying to figure out if temperature is playing a role in the sex of the reproduction and what comes out of the eggs. And you know what? We've had enough of this podcast. It's been a great night. I'm ready to sing a song.
We'll go home and get some.
You know what I mean? Yep. So if anybody's got any questions out here, that's what we're here for. And, you know, Steve Rogers, nothing but love for you. See, I'm wearing your shirt here today. So any of you folks out there in Carroll County, Outlaw Barbecue, make sure you go get yourself a sandwich. You know, I'm not sure he doesn't have a cheesesteak, so we ain't got that to worry about.
Time for the fat crab to sing.
That's right. That's right. The fat crab to sing. Hey, folks, it's next weekend. It's now. It's time. I'm coming back bigger than ever. My crabs, they have three first names. It's Heavy, Full, and Fat. My crabs, they have a fourth name. Absolutely Mustard Packed. So if you ask me where they're from, where are they from, Gary? They're 100% guaranteed Maryland number ones. At the crab stand, here's a fact I know for sure, we're coming back. Kapow! Kapow! See you next week, folks. Thank you.